Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Warning, Pastor Scheidbach is not politically correct, and even more shocking, he is a Christian who uses the word God and prays in Jesus' name in public.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Well, what have we for today? So much to talk about, so little time. You know, I had a segment on listener response. You know, where I take a few minutes and respond to some of the callers? I do that every now and then. Sometimes when the callers are attacking me with an argument that illustrates an important point I want to make, I'll bring up the call, but I don't name the person usually. In fact, I don't think I ever have in that case. I do name a caller if I have their permission. But no worries, I never give out addresses, a la Spike Lee or Roseanne Barr. Usually these are positive calls, something I want to share with my audience. By the way, I get a lot of really great calls, and I'm sure my audience would enjoy, but the stars have to line up in a pretty special way, pretty rare way, for a call to end up becoming part of the show. That's just the way it works in show prep and development and all that. Anyway, I'm thinking about doing some response to listener as an opening segment for the show. There are some challenges with this. For example, the time it takes to run down permissions to use a caller's name on the air, that can present a problem. It just happens to be our show policy. And if one of my regular callers happens to say something I disagree with, it just seems unfair to me to contradict them on the air when they have no opportunity for rebuttal. So by the way, that's why I'm a little careful about those sorts of things. I'm interested in your opinions about this. So give me a call, let me know what you think. Anyway, back to the work at hand. Let's see. It is Easter week, my favorite holiday. So, of course, ABC has to do a hit piece on the Christian faith. Here's an article titled, Did Jesus Ask Judas to Betray Him? Oh, brother. And, this is from the same people who bend over backwards to avoid offending Muslims, right? But they missed no opportunity to offend Christians. Well, that's because, you know, Muslims are under the protection of political correctness these days, you know. When Obama's Muslim Brotherhood succeed finally at forcing Sharia law into place here, do you think they're going to tolerate Muslim bashing? It's going to be a very interesting thing to watch the looks on the faces of those foolish people when they suddenly realize they've been feeding the crocodile that's planning to eat them. But they do continue on. You know, check out what's going on in the schools, huh? A group called Act for American Education has been around about 10 years, and for the past 2 years, they've been documenting a trend in public education toward promoting a positive view of Islam in the classrooms. Now, I brought to your attention many examples of overt efforts to promote a negative view of Christianity in the classrooms. Ironically, much of this is done in the name of separation of church and state. Think about that. What's that about? Anyway, this group has documented blatant and obviously purposeful misrepresentations of Islam found in school textbooks, and they published their findings in a 229-page book titled Education or Indoctrination, The Treatment of Islam in 6th through 12th Grade American Textbooks. Well, they sent this book out to 70,000 school board members across the country. We hope it does some good. Now, here are a couple of examples taken from an article I picked up from CitizenLink, and I'm reading through the article, though the books accurately describe the rise of European imperialism and its African slave trade. They are silent on the fact that the Islamic slave trade in Africa began 800 years before Europe's. Nor do they discuss the violent invasions and forcible takeovers of other nations, which resulted in the 6,000-mile-long Islamic empire as imperialism. But every time America burps, it's imperialism, right? One textbook treats this, by the way, a guy named Rogers says, quote, one textbook treats this by saying verbatim, Islam became popular in India. And then Rogers goes on to say, and I believe he's associated with this group that did the study, quote, if you ask the Hindus who know their history, well, they'll tell you 80 million Hindus were killed and 2,000 temples were destroyed by Islamic jihadists. That's hardly becoming popular. And according to the study, some of the textbooks also falsely claim that Islam extends equality to Jews and women under Sharia law, which by now everybody knows is nonsense. Now, what insanity is this? Think about it. By what possible rationale do they justify demonizing Christianity while at the same time sainting Islam and doing it with blatant lies? Okay, what else do we have here? Oh, they're after Scott Walker again. Launched a recall on him. Wisconsin is actually doing much better since he took over and put the union thugs on notice. They can't drive the state into bankruptcy with the rest of the country. So hopefully there are enough sane people in the good state to stop this latest action of the thugocrats. And here we go. Here comes what Heritage Foundation calls Tax-mageddon. That's kind of a perfect storm where the Bush tax cuts expire and the Obamacare tax increases begin to kick in. That's a double whammy, triple whammy. The experts are warning it could very well topple the U.S. economy. It's already wobbling. Something the Muslim terrorists attempted to do back in 9/11, remember? And I understand that now. $1 in $5 flowing into American pockets comes from the government. What? I've been noticing the aggressive way Obama's government is promoting social welfare. I mean, recruiting Americans aggressively to gather at the public nipple. Now, he has tasked every social welfare department in the country to go out and aggressively increase the numbers of people on the dole. There's an agenda here. He's using public advertising. Just about every other day, you're getting another letter or hearing another ad or seeing another promotional on the internet inviting you to take advantage of some special freebie from the government. You've probably seen the ad that says Obama has ordered the lowering of your house payment. You know, letters that entice you to refinance your home, taking advantage of Obama's recent dictatorial command that you get a better rate in your mortgage. You better be aware of this. Better watch out. Now, a whole lot of it's outright fraud. And the rest of it is Obama crying, "Sui! Sui!" And the pigs are coming a-running. Here's an article titled, quote, $1 in $5 flowing into American pockets comes from the government, end quote. Yeah, $1 in $5, that's 20% of Americans' income, is in one way or another coming from the government, which means it's coming out of the pockets of taxpayers. You understand? It's ridiculous. The entitlement mentality has got to be addressed aggressively. I mean, it needs to be rebuked vigorously by those of us charged with the task of instructing the conscience of our communities from the Holy Scriptures. Oh, yeah. You know that bit about teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I've commanded you? Something Jesus said after he arose from the grave? I'm doing a series titled Rich Man, Poor Man on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. You ought to be there or be square. Remember that one? When I'm done with it, I'll create a pamphlet from the notes and make CDs available. By the way, we could do DVDs now if you're interested. Did you receive this news story titled Marines Take on a Thief? Yeah, some Marines tackled a guy running out of, I read several accounts of this. One of them indicated it was a Best Buy in Augusta, Georgia. I'll just read the article. November 27, 2010, Associated Press. Augusta, Georgia. A U.S. Marine reservist collecting toys for children was stabbed when he helped stop a suspected shoplifter in eastern Georgia. Best Buy sales manager Orvin Smith told the Augusta Chronicle that man was seen on surveillance cameras Friday putting a laptop under his jacket at the Augusta store. When confronted, the man became irate, knocked down an employee, pulled a knife, and ran toward the door. Outside were four Marines collecting toys for the service branch's Toys for Tots program. Smith said the Marine stopped the man, but he stabbed one of them, Corporal Philip Duggan, in the back. The cut did not appear to be severe. The suspect was transported to the local hospital with two broken arms, a broken leg, possible broken ribs, assorted lacerations, and bruises he obtained when he fell trying to run after stabbing the Marine. End quote. Well, there are about four versions of this story. One of them, by the way, is written for the Aussies. The one I like best is the one where they quote the police report, listing the injuries sustained by the thief and saying that he sustained them when he slipped and fell off the curb after stabbing the Marine. Of course, you're expected to be smart enough to know the Marine's buddies took care of working the, the negative energy out of the thief while subduing him. Har, har. But you're also expected to be smart enough to smell a fake story when you read one, or an embellished one, to know that no story coming from AP is going to cast Marines in any kind of positive light, or that any police report is going to betray such wanton disregard for law, no matter how sympathetic we might be with the sentiment. At least you should be suspicious of such stories. Clearly, this is an embellished story, so I checked it out, and sure enough, nevertheless, indeed, the Marines did save the day. but the police report is an embellishment by some playful patriot with a clever imagination. But anyway, here is a story about a Marine that is not embellished. A hero who threw himself in harm's way to save an Afghani girl. Hats off to Sergeant Dennis Weichel and his dear family, a Rhode Island National Guardsman, Marine, 29 years of age, an American hero. Some Afghan children were playing in the streets as they do and collecting brass bullet housings. They gather these and sell them. A convoy of military vehicles approached the kids, and some soldiers jumped out, worked ahead of the vehicles, shooing the children off the road. One little Afghan girl suddenly turned, ran back into the path of a 16-ton armored truck. Weichel jumped in front of the vehicle, grabbed the little girl. And it's a little unclear on exactly what happened here. I don't know if he threw the girl out of the way to safety and then was hit by or struck by the truck. In one report, it appears he held her up out of harm's way, was hit by the truck, and continued to strive to save a little girl and extended his arms, reaching her out of the way of harm, and took the hit upon himself. In any event, the injuries he sustained took his life. But he saved the little girl. But he died saving that little Afghan girl. My son is in Afghanistan, as probably most of you know. And, of course, I can't hear these stories without thinking of him. Sometimes he, like all our soldiers, becomes impatient with how Washington plays politics with their lives. America's soldiers have never lost a war, but American politicians have, to their shame. But we won't go there right now. Sometimes our soldiers ask why we're there. And the answer is very complicated. It has many layers. It has as many layers as an artichoke. But when you peel the layers and get to the heart of it, it really is to save the kids. Now think about it. The future generations, to give them a chance to breathe free, to live in a place where their children won't have to play in the dirt streets digging out brass shell casings. When I'm asked whether we should pull out, I say I want my kid home. And if this ended today and he came home, I'd be glad, like any Army dad. At the same time, I hear Iran's rumblings and I see the alignment between China, Iran, and Russia developing. And also, I know the threat of terrorism is still very real, even if Obama pretends it's not, and even if he won't use that word to describe what we're dealing with. I think pulling out would be premature. I'll be right back.
We have a pastor that doesn't compromise. You've got to come to church on Easter Sunday. You'll love it.
What I like about Lighthouse Baptist Church is that the Word of God is taught, and I want to invite all my friends to come hear the services on Easter Sunday.
The preaching is hot, and the pastor preaches in season and out of season. Come to Easter services here at Lighthouse Baptist Church.
I love the spirit here. I love just how I could come here, and it's a family, and I want to invite you to come to the Easter service at Lighthouse Baptist Church.
I love my church because it's an opportunity for me to serve in the ministry. I love that I can have someone to go to if I need anything, and I greatly encourage you to come for our service.
Want to help us slay the dragons of deceit with the sword of the Spirit? Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind. Devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, Brain Masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberty. Well, Starbucks has decided to enter into the culture war. They are convinced they will be able to venture into this controversy and come out unscathed. Well, they're wrong. It just takes a little longer than they expected, perhaps. It's going to cost them, just like it has cost every one of these goofball companies that decide to wage war against traditional values American. Why pick a fight with us? You know, why not just stay busy doing what you do best, which is making a very fine array of coffee drinks? You know what I mean? And here's a representative of Starbucks addressing shareholders a while back, and he's explaining why Starbucks decided to go ahead and take a public stand on the issue of gay marriage. Now, I thought it was interesting that, according to the spokesman for the company, Starbucks believes that they are compelled to come out publicly in favor of same-sex marriage because of their long-standing commitment to diversity. They believe they owe it, right, to their 200,000-plus employees and their shareholders to take a public stand for diversity by excluding from representation the views, beliefs, and values of probably well over half of the 200,000 employees and most likely 60 to 70% of their shareholders. And when you go to the international market, it's going to be more like 80 to 90% of the populations where they hope to sell their product. Yeah, real diverse. Isn't it interesting how stupid smart people can be? If you've seen the YouTube video clip, I think you would agree with me that it's really obvious that this fellow's real proud of his diversity, while never stopping to think what a narrow-minded, bigoted exclusivist he is. You see, this whole diversity thing, doesn't it have to include respect for and representation of all points of view? But it never does. It never includes the Christian point of view. It is an exclusivist mentality that hides behind diversity in a manner similar to how terrorists hide behind women and children. They must hide behind such facades at present. But if we sit back and let this continue, they're going to drop the facade of diversity, and the pretense of tolerance will vaporize in the heat of their Antichrist zeal. Oh, yeah. Let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. It's more of an Easter psalm than you might realize. If you look closely, you will notice the haughty arrogance in their tone and manners, in their face. You'll see lurking just below the surface of their thin skin, oh my, a very real hatred for Christians. The homosexual lifestyle is perverse, it's unnatural, it's very unhealthy. Starbucks thinks it should be accepted under the rubric of diversity. That's absurd. You just throw the word diversity out there and the debate's over? How shallow can you get? So what, a man marrying his car is a diverse point of view, right? That's a diverse lifestyle. How about bestiality, pedophilia, sadomasochism? It's funny how every time we point this out, they go straight to, oh, don't be ridiculous. Well, hey pal, I remember when you would have said that very same thing if I warned you the day would come when homosexuals would demand a so-called right to marry. Yeah, besides, we're already hearing arguments supporting pedophilia, sympathetic to it and endorsing it. And we're hearing suggestions that bestiality is just another way of going about it. And sadomasochism is routinely represented in public media as just some benign, though somewhat bizarre, fetish. And my focus at present, however, is on the hypocrisy of this diversity mantra. Clearly, their diversity is exclusive against Christian views and sentiments. Do you understand that Starbucks has decided that Christian views and sentiments among their employees and so on are not to have any representation in their company? Yeah, they might just as well have put out a sign that says, you can work here as a Christian, but don't suppose for one moment your views or your sentiments will be respected or honored or represented by the company. If you work for us, you're working on behalf of company interests, and those interests now include promoting homosexuality. Do you see the absurdity of these companies doing this? It's ridiculous. If you are a Christian and you work for Starbucks, your sentiments, your concerns, your beliefs have no representation in that company. You've been marginalized. You've been excluded. Now, if I were you, I'd write a letter of grievance to the company explaining that while you do not object to anybody's right to have varying personal views on whatever subject that you disagree with them. So what? But you do object to them alienating you. That you believe they have made a decision that expressly and overtly is critical and objectionable to your Christian values, and that since they have positioned the company brand openly against traditional values, they've isolated you in the workplace, they've set you up to be a target of ridicule, that there are now questions concerning your own future in the company. Now think about it. Will they advance a person who disagrees with the company position on this subject? I mean, it goes on and on and on, right? Because they've come out now and made it a company thing. So here we go again. If Starbucks wants to pick a fight with me, what can I say? All right, fine. I won't shop at your store. I'm not going to allow Starbucks to manipulate me into supporting the gay agenda through identification with their brand. Again, not because some or all the company administrators believe in gay marriage. I don't care. That's their business. But because they've decided to arrogate to themselves the prerogative to speak for everyone else in the company rather than let the individuals of the company speak for themselves on matters of this nature, matters of conscience. Goodbye, Starbucks. I mean, good night. I'm sure I'm not going to topple your company, but my business alone, personally, is going to cost you well over $1,000 a year, as if you care. But if you add the coffee, the gifts, and so on that I buy, actually, it's probably significantly more than that when you consider all the gift cards and other gifts people buy for me from Starbucks because they know it happens to have been one of my favorite stores. But be that as it may, If individuals in Starbucks administration want to support gay marriage, you know what? It's a free country, and you're welcome to your liberties. But when you arrogantly presume to speak for 200,000 employees and who knows how many hundreds of thousands of investors and position your company as taking sides in a culture war that's dividing this nation, if you decide to connect your company brand with a behavior directly associated with AIDS and other diseases and call it diversity, when by doing this you have actually taken an openly hostile position against the millions of Americans who hold to traditional Christian values, well, what can I say for you? Do you actually think no one can compete with you? That you are beyond the reach of competition? Do you think we can't find our coffee elsewhere? Or that some smart entrepreneur will not see an opportunity that you've created here? Anyway, Home Depot did the same thing a while back, and the only reason they've stabilized after the first wave of reaction to this was because they backed off, got quiet about it. And just from me, this past 2 years or whatever, Home Depot has lost well over $7,000 of business. Now, look, we've started our own schools. We can start our own stores, too. We're very industrious people, you know. It was people of Christian values who built this nation. Not rock and roll. Yeah. You know, talk about arrogant liberal blowhards. Now, that's one of those interesting words we throw around, understanding it instinctively, but having no idea where it came from or how it came to be used to speak of an arrogant twit. And we'll talk about twit some other day. But blowhard was used in the mid-1800s as a nickname for sailors. Anyone who has sat and listened to a group of sailors, blowhards, swapping stories over a mug of grog can easily understand where the word gets its current meaning. Anyway, POTUS versus SCOTUS. Obama chides the court, reminding them that they are an unelected body, and so should be very careful about overturning a law made by an elected one. You know, another example, either of his woeful ignorance of the Constitution, his utter contempt for it, or both. And this he does while the court is deliberating a case. Right? What's he trying to use political pressure to influence the court's decision? What's the matter with this guy? Is there no part of our government this man will respect or honor? He's defied and in turn defiled every aspect of our process. I don't know if our neighbors understand the seriousness of this. Obama's press secretary tries to dismiss it as an unremarkable thing, as if all Obama did was refer the court to a precedent. Excuse me? What the president alleged said was that the court needed to be mindful that they are an unelected body, and only a complete dolt or someone willfully ignorant could have missed this point, which clearly was that the court, as an unelected body, was inferior to the elected body, namely Congress in this case. But this statement from Obama takes hubris completely beyond the pale. It's so mind-boggling. I mean, honestly, it's difficult to respond to something like this. It's stunning. But let me try to sort it out for you. First, there is the blatant ignorance of the statement. The Constitution clearly establishes each branch as separate and equal. Furthermore, the system is set up on the idea of checks and balances. Hello? The whole process is designed, for example, to allow the executive to, in some measure, check the excesses of the Congress. And the Congress is given certain powers that allow them to check excesses of the executive. The judiciary is likewise given certain powers to check the excesses of either the Congress or the executive, while the executive and the Congress have certain powers reserved to them that give it a kind of check over the judiciary. It's the nearest thing to perfection in government ever conceived. It is the intent of our founders that each branch be separate but equal. The executive is not supposed to be over the Congress or over the court. Hello? Listen, Obama is clearly attempting to establish the executive power in this government as preeminent over all others. And many of you are buying into that. You're just moving right along with it and don't even realize what's happening. He is elevating the executive as presiding over the Congress and presiding over the courts. And that is a blatant violation of both the spirit and the letter of the Constitution. It shows disregard and contempt for our system of governance, which we know he has anyway. Now, second, there is the utter hypocrisy of the statement. Now, Obama's not concerned when the court reaches beyond its job description and does the work of Congress by creating law from the bench, as in Roe v. Wade, something they are not supposed to do. But then he recoils like a threatened snake when the court makes any kind of move and seems to be inclined to do its job and rule on the constitutionality of a law, something they are supposed to do. Now, third, the utter wickedness of this man is so open that it's scary, and you don't see it. He talks like he is the champion of the democratic process, like he is the protector of the will of the people. The elected body he exalts above the court, with his complicity, forced Obamacare into law, with utter contempt for their electorate and for the democratic process. Remember, we got to pass the law so we can find out what's in it? Don't forget this nonsense that went on. Obama, Pelosi, and Reid manipulated the system mercilessly, corrupted it, nearly destroyed it. Don't forget reconciliation. Don't forget 3 a.m. deliveries of a 2,000-plus page bill to be voted on that day. Don't forget how the opposition was literally forced out of the negotiations to railroad this bill through. For this man to say it was passed by a strong majority is one of the most outrageous lies in political history. To pretend he is the protector of the democratic process when he has openly defied and defiled it is beyond anything I've ever seen as an open display of Satan-like deception and wicked perversion of truth. It's evil, but I must adieu. Easter is my favorite holiday. I hope you'll join me for services this Sunday. Remember Weichel's family. His sacrifice for that Afghan girl reminds me of another who sacrificed his all to save us all. When Jesus died on the cross, he took our place. And when he rose from the dead, he defeated man's greatest enemy, death. Happy Easter. Enjoy your celebration. Come celebrate with us. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know if you see that they are on. You say, lights on if you see that they are on, and you will ride like Revere. Spread the warning. It means you agree with me, you appreciate what I'm saying, and you want to help me get the word out. Or you could call and say, lights off. And that means you reject what I'm saying, you disagree with me. So what will it be today, lights on or lights off? Now, the number to call is 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. If you're using a cell phone, you don't need the 1, just 888-770-8000. Leave a message for me on our listener response hotline. I'm in town this week, so I will be taking calls. It's a free call to anyone within the continental United States, from outside the country, or for those who prefer it, you can email me by going to our website and clicking on the Contact Us button. You can go to our church website, santamarialighthouse.org, or to our Brain Massage Show website, which is thebrainmassageshow.com. If you're in a hurry, you can just call in, 1-888-770-8000, say lights on and hang up, or lights off and hang up. But I do prefer when you leave me a message if I happen to be on a call with another listener. When you go to the website, you can just click on the lights on button or the lights off button and hit send. Or you can click one of those and then write me a note. I love to hear from my listeners. I look forward to hearing from you. God bless you. God save America. I'll see you in church.
I love my church because it's an opportunity for me to serve in the ministry. I love that I can have someone to go to if I need anything.
I'm thankful for the friends, the good friends that I have at Lighthouse Baptist Church, and I encourage you to come and meet them at our Easter service.
Well, the truth is taught here, and there's a true Spirit of God here.
It's the first church that I've ever felt loved and welcome.
I love Lighthouse Baptist Church because the Word of God is preached and taught faithfully, without adding anything to it or omitting anything from it.
I love this church because it's a place where you can come and grow and, you know, and be taught the Word of God and be fed, and a place where you're going to be loved.